Hey, it's Jenny Nash, founder and CEO of Author Accelerator. I hear so many people tell me that book coaching sounds like their dream job and they wish they could do it, but they can't because fill in the blank. They don't have an agent. They haven't written a bestseller. They don't have a PhD. They weren't an English major. They don't know enough about the publishing industry, whatever the thing is. And I can tell you that I see people overcome these things every single day. I have a presentation on this, on imposter syndrome. It's the single biggest barrier keeping most people from saying yes to their dream job. Come check it out at bookcoaches.com/imposter. That's bookcoaches.com/imposter.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay.
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is Hashtag Am Writing, the podcast about writing all the things. Fiction, nonfiction, short pieces, long pieces, pitches, proposals, anything you're working on, because this is the podcast about sitting down and getting your work done.
And I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and The Addiction Inoculation, which is like out this week, and I'm so excited. I can hardly stand it. It's so amazing when things go out into the world that have been only in your office. Anyway, so I write for, who do I write for these days? New York Times, The Washington Post, Airmail, and that's where I write these days. I'm sorry, I'm just discombobulated because Pub Day is coming up!
And I am KJ Delantonia, the author of the novel The Chicken Sisters and the nonfiction book How to Be a Happier Parent, former editor of the Motherload blog at the New York Times, not contributing anywhere right now, really, if we're just honest about it. I am just handed in revisions on a second novel, and I'm playing around with a third and a fourth. So that's where I am.
We have an amazing kick-ass guest today. I'm so, so excited. I believe she's come up in, we've mentioned her on the podcast before. KJ and I are both humongous fans and friends with the inimitable Jenny Lawson. Jenny is the author of many books, but originally I met her as a blogger, as this woman called the Blogess. And I believe the first thing I ever read was the Beyoncé Chicken I believe it was the Chicken Post, and have been a fan ever since. And Jenny has many books that have hit the tippy top of the New York Times bestseller list, and her new one, and like Furiously Happy, which is just hysterical and wonderful. But her newest book is called Broken, and she has come to talk to us both about the book Broken and a little bit about being broken. Hi, Jenny.
Hello. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to be here. I love you guys so much. And I am not contributing in any way to anything. But I'm feeling good today. So I'm excited to actually talk to people in real life.
Oh, I'm so glad. Well, and anyone who knows Jenny's work knows A, introvert, you know, will always, you know, put off having to actually do the face-to-face thing. So number one, that's amazing. Number two, the fact that you're feeling good today. We're also going to be talking a little bit about that. And the fact that this book Broken is, a number one, so beautiful. And number two, out in the world after a long time of not looking like it might actually make it out into the world. So we want to talk to you a little bit today. Jenny has so bravely, so publicly talked about mental illness and about depression and about just all of the stuff that she has to go through behind the scenes when she writes. So where should we even start? I guess we should start with your baseline in terms of like what it is you're dealing with when you have, in general, but obviously we want to talk about it in the context of writing.
I'm very much like Dorothy Parker in that I hate writing and I love having written.
Yeah.
It is such a lonely and just very like too quiet in my head when I'm writing. But once it's actually out, it's so wonderful that you can sort of close the chapter on, you know, whatever story it is that you're trying to tell. And so that's so wonderful. But I struggle a lot with writer's block. And I know a lot of people are like, writer's block doesn't exist, but fuck you, it totally does. Because I have, oh, can I curse? I didn't even ask.
We'll do a warning at the beginning.
Okay, good, good. Or you could just bleep that out. So yeah, I struggle a lot with writer's block. So I have a lot of different tools that I use that help me, and a lot of different things that, and I'm still not super successful at getting my writing done, but it comes eventually.
So when you're trying to write and the writer's block comes for you, what does it look like? What does it feel like? And obviously we want to talk about some of the tools you use to get through that.
Typically, I think a lot of the time when I have block, it comes down to depression and anxiety. Part of that is with the anxiety, there's this, you know, idea of this imposter syndrome where I feel like I'm not funny, I'm overrated, people are going to at any moment realize like, oh, she just writes in these super long run-on sentences. Does she not understand how commas work? What's the deal with punctuation? Why doesn't she like it? And so that's part of it. The other part is when I'm dealing with depression, I have this just utter exhaustion, and that exhaustion makes me sort of unable to be creative in this in the same way. A lot of people are like, okay, well, as long as I set up, you know, from 8 to 5, I have to write, and even if I write and I write and it's not very good, I can come back and I can re-edit it. And for me, it doesn't work that way for me, because if I write something and I don't like it, I feel like I don't have the ability to go back and say, okay, that didn't work that way. Let's use it in a different way. So for me, I'll have an idea in my head of something that I want to write, and it will ruminate for maybe weeks, maybe even a month, until finally all of a sudden something will click and I'll be like, oh my God, I know how to write this. Oh, okay, wait, these two chapters actually go into each other. And if I write this chronologically, oh my God. And I literally will yell at my family, do not talk to me for 20 minutes. Because if they interrupt me, it's gone. It's completely gone. Yeah. So yeah, it's ridiculous. It's like constipation, basically. And then you finally get to go to the bathroom, and you've been like, I haven't gone in a week. And then you do, and you're like, oh, thank God. I thought I was going to have to go to the hospital. But it was like that, but with my head.
I have this thing where I used to work out a lot of chapters while I was cross-country skiing, and sort of everyone knew that when I got home that I needed like 5 minutes just to make sure I put stuff down on paper. Sometimes I would do the same thing. I'd come in the house. I'm like, hold on. Nobody talked to me for a few minutes, so I got to get this stuff down. There's something about that. It's called the default circuit in your brain, and it sort of, when those floodgates open, it allows those things to come through. One of the things that, speaking, since you're talking about sort of editing and figuring out how it works, I have to say one of my favorite chapters in the book is the editing chapter, the chapter on editing being hell. It's hysterical. It's it also shows that you have a great relationship with your editor, and your editor, yes, is very understanding. Can you talk a little bit about your editing process? Because I think, especially since you have all of those voices coming at you saying, you know, either that this stinks or that you should just stick it in the trash can, just delete it forever. How does your editing process go?
Well, typically, anything that I write, I tend to go in and self-edit and self-delete about 50% of everything that I write right off the top, just because I have a tendency to say the same thing over and over again. And then once I have it, I keep it, and then I'll come back to it a couple of days later to see, like, did this actually work or did it just work in my head? Because sometimes it's like, you know, when you have that dream and you're like, oh my God, this is the funniest thing ever. And then you write it down and you're like, oh, I can't wait until I wake up in the morning and I can write this down and put it in a blog post. And then you look at it and you're like, what the hell? This doesn't make any sense at all. So that happens with me a lot with writing, where I think I've got something and it turns out I don't at all. So typically what I'll do is if I look at it and I'm like, this isn't very good because it doesn't make sense, then I'll delete it. If I look at it and I say, this isn't very good because it's not funny, then I will save it and come back to it 2 days later, because sometimes I'm just in the wrong state of mind to think something is funny. So just like some people can like come across your book at the wrong point in their life and be like, oh, I really didn't like this. And then, you know, maybe 3 years later they come and they're like, this book's so good. I don't know why I didn't like it. Same thing for us, reading our own stuff. So then once I do actually feel like, okay, this is funny or this is interesting or this is unique, then I send it to my agent, Nidhi Madan, and she is so great at kind of just looking at everything and very quickly saying, this works, this doesn't work, but also in the kindest, sweetest way possible. You know, I think one of the best things that you can do when you're looking for an agent and an editor is to find the people who work with your personality. And I think it's very much like finding a good therapist, that there might be a great therapist that's great for one person, but is not right for you. And so I know for me, what I need is I need people who are going to be very nice because the voices in my head are already telling me terrible things. So I need them to, you know, be very, very sweet to me. But at the same time to be, very honest about what's working and what doesn't work. Because it's so hard to see, you know, yourself, mm-hmm. what's going on. So then if she likes it, then I typically will sort of polish it up and I will call. I have several people, just friends who are sort of readers and, you know, I'll just call and be like, can I read this chapter to you? Does this sound right? And I'll listen to the laughter and I'll listen to like what hits and what doesn't. And I think it's really important to have a variety of different readers because what's going to work for one person isn't going to work for another person. It's a great way of having so many different mindsets looking at it and saying, this is not coming off right, or this reminds me of something else. So maybe they'll make it better by, you know, saying, hey, remember that story that you told me? And they also have, you know, different sensitivities. So they're going to give you a much better idea of like, this actually could be considered offensive, or this, you know, maybe you can restate this. And I think that can be really helpful. And then once it's gone through that, then I send it to my editor, Amy Einhorn, who has been my editor that I've just followed every place that she has gone. I've been like, I can't go anywhere. Just let me stay with you. Just stop running away from me.
So she has switched publishers and you've followed her.
She was at Penguin. At Penguin when Let's Pretend came out. What was that? 10 years ago, 12 years ago, something like that. Then she went to Macmillan and she had her own imprint, and now she's at Holtz, which I think is part of Macmillan. I don't know. I get confused about the whole thing. Yeah. So she's just awesome. And so I send it to her and she goes through and comes up with, you know, this is what works, this is what doesn't, and can you flesh this out more? It always feels so great when I first turn it in, you know, and you feel like, oh, it's off my plate. I don't have anything to do. And then 5 minutes pass and you're like, they hate it. Oh my God, they hate me. Oh my God, they're burning my contract. They will never speak to me again. But she's really great at picking out what works and what doesn't work. And I am very, very, like, I listen to everything, but sometimes there would be some chapters where I would be like, no, this is a really good chapter. And maybe Amy and Nidhi would be like, it's fine, but it doesn't really fit with the book. But, and for the most, like almost always, they are 100% right. And so I have learned to listen more to them and to trust their judgment.
I've learned to listen to, even when my editor, Gail, I can't think of a time when she's been wrong. Her judgment is just so good. And there, even though I have those times where I'm like, oh my gosh, how could she possibly make me get rid of that? And then, but now I've got that little voice that says, let's just wait on that. Just think about it a little bit longer. And I think you will find that Gail is 100% correct. So yeah, that's been my experience with Gail, which is nice. It's now reliable, at least, that I'm the one who's wrong. So at least I've come to expect it. Yeah.
It's nice.
Do you tend to send chunks to your editor, or do you send large swaths of the book, or the, like, I've done both, sending the whole thing at once and sending it in chunks. How do you do it?
It sort of depends on what's going on, but it's not unusual for me to send sort of a chapter at a time. Mm-hmm. But usually when I send it to her, I usually have at least the first batch will be at least like half the chapters of, you know, here's kind of what I'm thinking. This is sort of my idea for the book. And then she can kind of say like, okay, well, here are the themes that I see coming out. And it's interesting because so often I don't really see the themes in the same way until like it's pointed out to me where somebody's like, oh, actually, this is the running theme through your book. I'm like, well, that wasn't on purpose. So good to know.
I love the particular humiliation in the editing chapter of finding out that you've been using a word wrong your entire life. Or even worse, as you know, since you narrate your own audiobooks, I have been saying that word wrong my entire life. And how humiliating is that? Even so much that I push back against my producer. I'm like, no, I'm sure there's an alternate pronunciation on that. He's like, no, I just looked it up. You've been saying it wrong your whole life. Yeah.
Right. Oh, my gosh. The entire time. And, you know, I recorded the audiobook in my closet because I couldn't leave my house, you know, for COVID. And so I had these, I had my audio editor and my producer on, they're like listening yeah. as I'm recording in the closet. And there were just so many times, and they just stop and they're like, and my, oh my gosh, she's so nice. Her name's Maddie. And she is so nice. And instead of being like, that's not how you pronounce it. Instead, she would say, have you ever heard it pronounced? And she would, and so that I'd be like, oh, is that the way I'm supposed to say it? We actually had this full, what was it? Because most of the times I'm like, whatever you say is right. Because I read, but I don't listen. Right. And so it's totally. But there was one that was the plural of minutiae. And which I thought was minutiae,
or she, however, yeah, I don't even like, know how you pronounce it.
Have you ever heard it pronounced minutiae? And I was like, there's no possible way that's a real word. There's no way. It turns out that is how it's pronounced.
Huh.
Yeah.
So, Jenny, I have to ask you, your Broken, your new book, and by the way, it's Broken in the best possible way, has a cover unlike any cover I have ever seen before. Could you, your covers are always great because you have either your raccoon on Furiously Happy, you've got your mouse on Let's Pretend This Ever Happened or Never Happened, but I gotta ask about the cover of Broken.
Yes, it's something very different than what I've done before, so... there's this artist that I love. His name is Omar Ryan, and he does these portraits of women, and they're sort of these like Rubenesque, sort of, I don't know, Victorian portraits of these women, and they look so beautiful and put together, but they are carrying around these enormous demon beasties. And I just thought this is the perfect representation to me of what it is like dealing with mental illness, because yeah. you're still trying to be happy, yeah. you're still trying to get things done, but you're carrying around this monster with you. And so, you know, I was like, I'd love him to do my portrait and have this personification of, you know, dealing with whatever struggle you're dealing with. And yeah. And he has the, you know, the flowers stuck in the beastie's mouth, and like the beastie's like, you know, I'm trying to be adorable.
Hair ribbon.
Right? I'm dressing it up. I'm like, you know what? I still love you, even though you're a pain in the ass.
Well, I don't know if you remember, but you did some of the early material from Furiously Happy. You read out loud at Mom 2.0, and you were very nervous, and it was so good, and we were so honored to hear it. But you talked about that sometimes, you know, writing about this stuff is like dragging monsters out from underneath the bed. And that became sort of a story that I told about coming out as an alcoholic. So your monsters mean a lot to me, Jenny. Your monsters mean a lot to me because they're part of my story now, too.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Oh, it's a lovely book. I think everyone's going to love it. And it's you. I mean, that's the thing that's so wonderful about your writing is that there is no wall between the reader and you. It's you on the page, which, you know, I can imagine would be very difficult to do when you're not feeling great about that person that's on the page, or when your brain is telling you that you're not enough to be on the page.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's probably part of the reason why there's so many years that come in between these books, because I spend so much time just not liking myself and not liking anything that comes out of what I do. And so I have to just kind of wait until those quieter moments come, when my head is not saying terrible things and when I feel like, okay, actually, I can write this. Like, I do have this story in me. And the thing is that no one else can tell this story in the same way that I tell it. And so whenever I start to feel like really blocked, I think of someone else trying to tell the story for me. And I think like, no, I wouldn't like that. This is what I would want to say.
I really found this book to be so much more, your voice, your writing voice is so much more mm-hmm. assured than it was in the last two books. And I wondered, do you think that's a reflection of having published the last two? Do you think it's experience with writing and editing? Or what do you think has evolved for you?
You know, I think it's a number of different things, but I think one is, you know, when the first book came out and it did well, I had this feeling of, well, it probably only did well because people felt sorry for me. And then when then I was writing the second one and I was like, oh my gosh, this is even harder because the first one did really yeah. well. And how am I going to follow up that? I mean, it's all downhill from here. And then it did well. And so I think it's just that process. You know, even in the time that I was writing this, I was so behind on my deadline and was feeling like, you know, that I'm so slow compared to, I think, the average person. And so, like, in the middle of writing this, I wrote my, You Are Here coloring book, just because it was like, okay, you know what, here's something that I can do. So I can feel like I'm creative in some way, and having a different sort of project to move off to for a little bit, to let my mind go in a different direction for 6 months or a year, made it very helpful to be able to come back. So I think having those extra different projects that you can drop into and be like, okay, let's let my mind work in a different way. I don't remember who said it, but somebody said, you know, a pause is as good as a rest. And I'm not sure that that's actually correct, because I think a nap is better than all of them. But a change, mm-hmm. I think, is really good.
We were just talking to Nalani Singh recently, and she said the same thing. She always tries to have a project going that's just for fun, and she's not worried about people looking at it or it being something that someone's expecting, that it's just something she's working on for fun. And I have to tell you that You Are Here was something that was really, really important to my students. After it came out, I started buying. You sent us some, actually, because one of my students wrote a letter to Jenny once, KJ, about just really liking her work, and he wanted to see a picture of her cat, because she mentions the cat in the book, and she sent my student a picture of her and her cat. It was the sweetest thing, and she sent us some books, and then You Are Here, this beautiful coloring book, became something that was really important to my students. And I just had to keep buying copies of it, because my students, you know, come and go a lot. And so I tried to always have copies of it around. So when someone was really having a difficult moment, moving from whatever it was they were supposed to be doing over to coloring something really helped manage their moods. It was really helpful to have your coloring book in the classroom. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. I love that so much. You know, I felt when I put it out, and There's a fair amount of cursing in there, but it's well-meaning cursing. And for a while I was like, it is a coloring book. Maybe I should just take that out. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to be me, and it's just going to be out there. And if people like it, they like it. And if they don't, they don't. And then they did. And it's so great, because, you know, even now sometimes I will pull out the book and, you know, I'll color and I'll be like, come on, Haley, come here, look, let's do everything in shades of blues. And So, yeah.
I actually liked telling, it was helpful for them to hear the backstory of the book, too, which was that, you know, when you have to go travel or when you have to go do stuff or when you get nervous, you tend to do these beautiful, elaborate line drawings, which is what became, you know, the basis of the coloring book. And so I tell my students that these beautiful images were created out of someone who was having trouble expressing herself in other ways or was having trouble and feeling bad about herself. And so that's just part of the wonderful origin story for this book, and they got to share in that because so many of my students had anxiety or depression, so it was a great part of that story for them.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
So how did the creation of the coloring book fit into the deadline for Broken?
Well, the nice thing about my editor is she understands that I struggle with deadlines and with getting things done, and she has, you know, family members that deal with, you know, a lot of the same struggles, and so she's very nice about what I'm just like, listen, it's gonna be a while. I'm not gonna hit this deadline. I'm gonna be years late. She's very, very nice about it while still, like, you know, gently pushing, which is exactly what I need. You know what's funny is sometimes I would send chapters that I was like, okay, well, this is something that I wrote just for me, but I know it won't fit in the book. But I'll just send it to her because I'll feel like, oh, she'll look and she'll be like, oh, okay, well, at least she's trying. And I'll just let her down gently and be like, yeah, this isn't right for the book, you know. But, and so I'm like, see, it'll be back on her. And I'll be like, oh, well, that's the reason why I'm late. You know, you turned down some of these chapters. But what's funny is there were a couple that I was like, she was like, this is great. No, this is great. And I'm like, no, we can't put this, like the Shark Tank chapter. I was like, this is kind of raunchy. And she was like, it is a departure from what you've done, but it's really funny. And it's a very different sort of, you know, what you normally share. And I was like, I know, because I didn't think anybody'd see it. And she was like, no, it's good.
It was just proof of life. I was just sending proof of life.
Exactly.
Oh, all right. Well, let's take a quick break and then we're going to come back and talk about what we've been reading.
Jess, you bring us back.
All right. Well, I would like to talk about one of my new favorite escapes when I tend to listen to a lot of sort of intense nonfiction, as some of you may know. And every once in a while, I just love a good escape. And I can always count on Harlan Coben to give me a great escape and a story that I'm going to be engaged in, like, right away. And then Harlan Coben does this amazing thing at the end. He's always got like, oh, there's the resolution. That's who did it. And it's over. And then he does a second one after that. So there's always like a, ooh, I've hit the answer to the, you know, all the mysteries here. And then he throws you for another loop. And it's just so much fun. So his new book is Win. It just came out last week. And what's fun is if you become a fan of Harlan Coben's books, like, half of them, a ridiculous number, have been adapted into shows for various networks, most of all, I think, Netflix. So he's a really, really fun listen. I always listen. And Steven Weber, who was one of the stars of Wings, he is the person who narrates most of Harlan Coben's books, and he is a fantastic narrator. So I highly recommend, and it is a great escape with a great narrator. What have you got, KJ?
Let's hear from Jenny first.
Okay, what have you got,
Jenny?
Like,
you know, one of my favorite books that I have read lately was Clara and the Sun, which I am not going to pronounce his name correctly, but it's from, I think it's Kazuo Ishiguro. That's it. And I love him. And when this book came out, I was lucky enough to get like an advanced copy. And so I was reading it on the couch, you know, a month or two ago, and I was just crying. And my husband walked in and he was like, why do you do this to yourself? Like, why are you intentionally? And I was like, it's so good. It's so good. It's, oh my God.
I read that too and really loved it and did not actually have that response. So if you are a reader who is not a fan of crying while you read, you're probably still cool here. Like, that was just saying. I get it. I can see it. But you can also read this with sort of a different attitude and be fine.
Yes.
I will say almost everyone I know is reading this book right now. It's all over people's social media. My dad has a copy right now. My husband has a copy right now. I'm waiting in line. But just tons of people I know are reading it right now and just loving it.
And a podcast that I love is doing it as their book read, and it's that podcast just came out this week. So if anyone wants to listen to a fun discussion of Clara and the Sun, you can check out the Book Riot podcast.
Oh, cool.
I love that.
Very cool.
Me too.
Okay, Missy, what do you got, KJ?
I did just read Clara and the Sun, which is probably slightly or classier than what I was going to talk about, but I'm gonna stick with my witchy Salem thriller, which is called The Fifth Petal. It's by Brunonia Berry, and it is not new, and I know why I bought it, but I'm sort of a little unclear on... It's actually the second in a trilogy, so I'm really a little unclear on why I did that, but it didn't matter. It was a standalone thriller. It was super fun. It's got all this great history for Salem and all this great, you know, mythology, and it's a really enthralling... I guess it's a paranormal mystery, and I enjoyed it very much. And one fascinating thing to me as a writer was that as you're sort of zooming towards the exciting end, there's at least one thing that it was just like, oh, no, wait. Like, there was, it's about witches, so I guess you've already suspended disbelief, right? But, you know, sometimes you do a physical thing that is not, and that sort of, it did kind of yank me out of the story. There was just this one thing where I was like, wait a minute, that doesn't work. But I didn't care. I was like, I don't care. I'm going back in. And I still highly recommend it. So I don't say that to criticize the book, which I enjoyed really deeply, but only to say for us as writers, you know, you can make a mistake. And if you've done everything else really well, readers are going to stick with you. This does not mean we should make mistakes.
Yeah.
But it is kind of encouraging. Not only did I stick with her, I'm going to buy another one. I'm all in.
Yeah, I just read a witch book day before yesterday that was so good. I don't know if it's out yet or if I had an advanced copy, but it's Hour of the Witch. It's like a
My local bookstore was promoting that actually today.
Really good.
Cool.
It was really, really good. It was I was expecting more like real witchcraft, but it was more about like what it was like in the Puritan times if you were a woman trying to escape a bad marriage and you know, how easy it was for people to be like, oh, you're a witch. You're going to burn.
Yeah.
So good.
Having just watched Jamestown, my husband and I were just having that conversation. Basically, if you do anything wrong and you have a good argument for it, it's too tough. You may just be called out as a witch and then they can just burn you.
Yeah.
While we're talking about books, I want to mention really quickly because I am wearing the Nowhere Bookshop shirt. It is one of my very favorite shirts. It's the one with the black, so the baseball shirt with the black sleeves, one of my favorites.
Oh, I love that one.
Because Jenny Lawson owns and operates the Nowhere Bookshop and unfortunately tried to open or was about to open during the pandemic. And I want to give props to your book club, actually. Could you tell us a little bit about your book club? Because it's the book selections you make are incredible.
They are fun. Yeah. So we started this book club. It's called the Fantastic Strangelings Book Club. And basically I pick one book every month that I think is just not going to get enough attention. And it's been really helpful for a number of different ways. One, you know, we have this bookshop that has literally never opened its doors to customers. So the longest running bookshop that I don't know how we're still in business, but we are. But that's part of the reason is because we have this great book club. And the books that we have, that we discuss are just, they're so much fun and so unique and interesting. The one, let's see, this month's was Lovey's book, Professional Troublemaker. Mm-hmm. Let's see, what did we do before that? We did Swallowed Man. We did Mexican Gothic. We did, oh my gosh, Catherine House, and they did Bad Things. And we did Samantha Irby's book, Wow, No Thank You. And we did just, I mean, so many great, wonderful, odd books. And what's wonderful is, you know, not only is it's helpful to us, but it's really helpful to the authors, because there's, you know, a couple thousand book sales that they didn't expect, to the point where even some of the publishers were like, okay, we didn't actually think we would sell that many books. And so we're going to have to do a printing just for you. And so there are some books that come out that actually have like a special imprint that say like, this book was printed especially for you, Fantastic Strangeling.
That's so cool.
Oh, that is awesome.
It's wonderful. It is really wonderful. So it helps the publishers and it helps us and it helps the author. And then we, you know, we get together and we sometimes we'll do like Zoom calls and, you know, with all the authors, or we'll just do, you know, Q&As, and I'll just send out emails. And it's just basically this book club where there's no rules. The discussion is online, so you can go to it whenever you want to. It's just really, it actually really helped me, because during some really dark times in this last year, when I felt like I couldn't do anything else, I could at least feel like, well, you know what, I could go out and I could read, because I need to pick a book for the next month. And so technically this is my job, so I shouldn't feel bad about the fact that I'm going to spend the entire day just like on the couch reading. And so, you know, giving me that permission to enjoy reading was, first of all, it saved me. And number two, it reminded me that we shouldn't have to look at reading as a guilty pleasure. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a wonderful thing that you do to give back to yourself and your mind.
Well, and this is a beautiful distillation of what we go to independent bookstores for, which is amazing curation. And that's what's happening in Fantastic Strangelings. So I highly recommend that you subscribe. And it's a pretty cool list, I have to say. And not one that you would find many places. So yay you.
Yay.
I love that.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so, so much for being with us today. This has just meant a lot to both of us. And your book is fantastic. We highly recommend you go out and get broken in the best possible way. And Jenny, where can people find you if they would like to find out more about you?
I am pretty much everywhere at The Bloggess. So if you just look up The Bloggess, you will pretty much find me.
All right. And you should, because her her tweets are amazing and her blog is amazing, obviously. And go check out her earlier books, too, because if you like Broken in the Best Possible Way, you will like the rest of them as well. Until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output, because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Pause. Stop.
Stop.
Thank you.